Hi, I'm Rose. Rose Henry, and I'm from the Coast Salish Nation, and they're just asking me to speak out about women's issues and that. And the way I see Canada, women's issues are the same no matter where we go. Women are continuously overworked and underpaid. Women continue to go missing. There was a walk that was happening this past summer where it was called the Walk for Justice, and the Walk for Justice was talking about ending violence against all women, but especially Aboriginal women. And they walked all the way from Vancouver Island to Ottawa, and they were raising awareness about why, you know, there were so many missing and murdered women. In Canada, there's 3,000. There's 3,000 missing women over the last 30 years, and it's not one of them has been found. And there's been no closure for their families. And so the police are saying that, you know, they're doing everything that they can. But what I'm saying is that they could do more if it was a white woman, if it was a rich woman, if it was a woman that, you know, was really well known. But because, you know, these women are Native, because they're poor, because, you know, they're not well educated in that. Well, I shouldn't even say that, well-educated, because one of the ladies that's missing from Saskatchewan, she's a university, she just finished university, and she was becoming a teacher. She got her certificate, and she was on her way to a conference. She was on her way to a teacher's conference, and she phoned her mom and dad and said that she was leaving, that she was stopping at a shopping mall to pick up something, and then she was going to Saskatoon. And she never made it to the conference. And this was only 2 years ago that this woman went missing. And so, you know, it's not just about, you know, whether she's rich or she's poor. It's the fact that she's a woman and she's Native. They still never found her. Her mom and dad went looking for her before the police did. So, you know, there's huge social injustice happening all over the place. But, you know, Canada likes to think that it's really an okay country, but it's not okay if you're Aboriginal or if you're from a small community. It's not okay if you're a woman. So, you know, most reserves, they're way, way outside of the city limits. And so for women, if they're getting beaten up, they have to leave their town or their community, and then they have to go into the city. And if you don't speak English, then you don't have any luck at all getting somebody that can translate for you, because there's language barriers, and then there's racial barriers, and then there's all this other stuff that leads to women staying in abusive relationships. And then it also means it tells the men and other abusers that it's okay to keep beating up women because they can't go anywhere. Nobody will listen to them, and it's like a way of them keeping control over us, right? And so this is why we have so many homeless people too, because homelessness, people don't think about homelessness as a way that, you know, our government is taking away our rights to live. They're taking away, you know, our money, so they don't give you enough money to live. They don't give you enough money to pay your rent. They don't give you enough, you know, choices on where you can work. You know, like, if you don't have a good education, you're stuck doing janitorial jobs. You're stuck working in restaurants that only pay minimum wage. And then, you know, that money, it's just enough for you to maybe eat, but not eat and pay your rent at the same time. So then it's all connected in that way because of, you know, you don't have enough money, so you end up on the streets. If you're a woman and you're homeless, you end up on the streets. You end up sleeping with johns. You end up sleeping with people you don't like, that's not your family. You don't get paid. enough to work, so then that makes you, or pushes you into the sex trade, that makes you more vulnerable. So you end up sleeping with somebody that is paying you to sleep that night, but nobody knows where you're at. And then they're saying, oh, okay, well, you know, I'm going to give you $5 or $10 to spend the night with me. And then, you know, next thing you know, you're being found murdered, right? And it's like, all that because you just need money to pay, you know, for your housing. You need money for your health care. You need money for your child's daycare. You even need money for your shoes. I know I met lots of people on the Walk for Justice that they weren't getting paid enough to pay for their rent. They were getting $12 an hour in Edmonton, but their rent was like, you know, $1,400-$1,500 for one room. And so the emergency shelter in Edmonton, they said that they would let men and women sleep in the same place, but they had to sleep head to head, not side by side, but head to head. That's how they were letting them sleep. And they said that they have lots of people there that are working at regular jobs, but because there's no place to rent, they have to let them sleep there. Here in Victoria, if you're homeless and you're a woman, there's still no place for you to sleep. And if you're married, well, you know, you're better off sleeping outdoors than trying to sleep indoors, because they don't let you stay in the emergency shelter together. So that's what happened with my husband and with me, because he has a job. He has a full-time job, but he gets off at like 3 o'clock in the morning. So by the time he gets off, the beds are gone. And then if I was to separate from him, then they would put me in the shelter, but then I wouldn't have any money to live on, right? So we ended up, for 15 months, we were sleeping in our car with our dog. We had a little Toyota that we were sleeping in, and then, you know, people were saying, well, how come you're out here? You both had jobs. And I said, we don't have a place to live, because people don't rent to you if you don't have a credit card. If you're Indian, that's harder to rent. If you have a dog, that's hard to rent. And they said that I don't own a credit card. I don't want to give up my dog, and I don't want to separate from my partner. So we chose to sleep in the car. And they said, well, you know, there has to be some place to live. And I said, well, you know what, there isn't any. So we got charged one time, because it's against the law to sleep in your car in Canada. And they said, well, it's also against the law to sleep, so, you know, because they've been trying to prove that in the courts here for a tent city. And that's why I wanted to have a tent city, is because, you know, I said, there's couples out there that, you know, they can't have one person sleeping in the shelter and then their partner sleeps outside. So that's why we should be having a tent city. That's why we should be having squats, because I see everywhere I go in Canada, there's vacant buildings. There's lots of people wanting, you know, to have a tent city. But, you know, the weather's too cold, there's no land. But I said, there's all these empty buildings. We should be looking at making a bylaw that said that they can't have any more buildings empty, while there's more homeless people, while there's more women ending up, you know, being found dead. Because, you know, people think 3,000 missing or murdered women, that's a lot of women going missing. That's a lot of children growing up without their parents or without their mother. And so I look at this, and it stems down to one thing: no housing. Doesn't matter where you are, every government says that they want to build housing, that they care about the homeless. Well, you know, I say, fuck that. The government doesn't really care. You know, it's like, so just take a building. That's all. You know, it's just take it, put up the tents. In Victoria, the homeless here, we've been fighting for 3 years. It'll be 3 years on October the 22nd that the city of Victoria, they charged us for pitching a tent. And they said that, you know, you're doing something illegal. And I looked at the police, and I said, you guys should be ashamed of yourself, because you have a house and you have power to open the doors to let the homeless in, but you don't. I said, so you should be ashamed. The next time somebody dies on the street here, that their death should be on their conscience, not on ours. And I said, people have to get something to cover their head, you know, if they don't want to get sick. And so when we went to court, there was 70 of us charged. They charged me for giving food away without a permit. So that's a new law. You know, it's like, it's against the law to give food away without without a safety permit. And I said, well, I have food safe. I said, I work in a fast food restaurant here. And I was like, well, they still charged, and then they dropped that charge, right? They said, well, you know, like, why are you doing this? And I said, well, why are you charging people, you know? And I said, why, you know, like, when a restaurant gives food, a takeout container for people that want to take their food home, I said, they're doing the same thing I'm doing, just giving the food away. And then they're like, okay. So the judge heard me and said, okay, well, we have to let that charge go. But they charged people for pitching a tent, and they said that we're not allowed to use a park. And I said, well, why not? And they're like, well, because you can't camp in there. And I said, well, there's a difference. I said, camping for people who have a house, that's a luxury, that's recreation. For people who are unhoused, that's not a luxury. It's survival, it's life. And I said, I would sooner see a person sleeping in a tent than sleeping, you know, in a doorway with nothing to cover them. And so the judge said, well, then, you know, we have to look at this a little closer. And then everybody that was charged, everybody put their name on the court document and said that they were going to go stand in front of the judge. They were ready to go to jail. Because one of the guys said, well, you know, it's either jail or I sleep outside. And he said, maybe I'll sleep outside and get arrested again. So he did, and he did arrest him again. And the judge said, well, why? And he said, well, because he said, I want to go inside. And the other, you know, 69 people said, well, we want to fight this. So now the mayor, his office is right there behind you there. He said he didn't want to go to court. And the homeless said, well, you don't have a choice now because you're threatening us. It's not fun to threaten a person. If you're threatening them to do something, you better be making good on your word, right? And so now the mayor is really mad. He's mad at the homeless, and that's why, you know, we're in court now, because he won't come to court. And we said we want him in court so he can tell us that we can't sleep, you know, in a tent. And so the judge said, well, maybe the city needs to define what the word is that they were looking for. And they, in the law here, they said that you can't not have an abode. It's an A-B-O-D-E, an abode, meaning a house. You can't have a house on a park. And I said, well, is a tent a house? And my lawyer, she asked the judge if that's a tent or is it a house. And the other lawyers, they're like, well, yeah, a tent's a tent and a house is a house. And I said, well, an abode, what is an abode? And now for 3 years they've been fighting to find what that word means. And they said, I'll help you. I said, I looked it up in the dictionary, and it said an abode is a house, a shelter, a cave, something that protects your body. And I said, so it's a house. I said, a tent protects you. And they're like, okay. So I said, now, you know, where are we going to go with this? So the judge said that they want to come back to court again. So the homeless here, everybody's been waiting to have that legalized, because if we win the court case here in Victoria, that means we win for the whole country, because we filed it under the Charter of Human Rights, under the federal court, so it's a constitution that we charge them with. And so the mayor and the city council here, they can't get out of it now. And so they're really mad. The homeless are getting organized, and they're getting organized everywhere we go because we talk about it all the time. Right? In Canada, there's 179,000 homeless people, and it's growing. I think they said something about like 5% a year it's growing. And so 179,000 homeless people, that's about the size of what, Toronto, Montreal, you know, Vancouver, any of those cities. That's how many homeless people we have here. And the average age here for in Victoria for homeless people is like the youngest is 12 and the oldest is in their 70s. And they're dying around the age of 44. And so that's not very old. If you make it to 44, you're considered old now. But in the eyes of the government, you're still young. You're still a young adult, right? And then, so last week when I was talking to some people at our place about the amount of people that have died here, most of them have been women. This year is the first year that they had more women dying than they have had men. Last year, they said there was 56 men. In 2007, or no, in 2007 there was 56 people. They were both men and women. In 2006, 120 people died on the streets just in Victoria. And this year in 2008, nobody's even bothered counting. It's just that there's another funeral. People are just like getting really oppressed. Like they're getting really sad and saying, you know, like, what's the point of living? And so, you know, it's like a vicious cycle. And we're trying to make things better for everybody by telling them that there is hope. You know, if we legalize the tent city, if we have squats, if we can bring people together. Homeless Nation, that's who I work for. With Homeless Nation, their headquarters is in Montreal. I checked their website today. Over 3,500 people are now registered on that site. And that's a site that is about, it's about empowering homeless people. Like, it's taking people who are not just homeless, but people who are poor, and saying, okay, we're going to teach you how to operate the video camera, we're going to teach you how to do emailing, and we'll teach you how to tell your story, right? And lots of people are saying this is great because this gives the homeless people employable skills. It gives them employable skills, that's training for them to have better employment. But that's not the answer right away, employment, because we're learning that. We have lots of people that have jobs that don't have a home. So it's one vicious cycle after another, right? Homes, healthcare, people are dying, you know, without, you know, a roof over their head, without good medicines, without food in their belly, you know. And that's where, you know, like for me, where I live in a community house. I live in a community house. It's only 4 bedrooms, but we have 8 people sleeping in there, 8 people and a dog. And out of that, every one of us contributes to the community. Like, we have a vegetable garden, we're cooking for Food Not Bombs, we're speaking out all the time, like we're speaking at public meetings, we're doing like forums, we're going to the politicians and saying, look, we're showing you we're a community and community housing works. We're right now at this point where we have lots of housing here for people that want to live in community housing. One common thing that we all have though is that we all contribute to the house. We contribute by contributing to the community, right? And the mayor and the city planners are trying to shut that down again. They're trying to get rid of that style of housing while there's a housing crunch going on, while the homeless is growing here. In Victoria, There's over 1,600 homeless people. That's really high. When you think about the size of Victoria, it's smaller than Vancouver, but per capita, it's high. Vancouver only has 3,700 homeless people.
And you said that more and more are going to come in Victoria with the coming of the Olympics in Vancouver?
Yeah. With more people coming from Vancouver because of the Olympics, we're going to see Victoria's homeless count skyrocketing. We're going to see the bed shortage happening in the shelters. Right now, for the city of Victoria, we only have 371 beds. And that's including, you know, that's including sleeping on the floor. So those really aren't beds. It's just floor space. But for fundraising purposes, they call it a bed. It's a mat. It's a rollout mat that the homeless bring in themselves. And so the government pays the emergency shelters to look after the homeless when the weather gets cold here. So with the Olympics, what's happening in Vancouver is that they're shutting down the old hotels. And so those old hotels, they're called single room occupancies, the SROs, they're being shut down. And we've heard that the homeless people are being offered one-way bus tickets to go anywhere in Canada. Well, most of the people that are in Montreal that are in those single rooms, they're new to the streets, you know, because they used to live in the suburbs, but they couldn't afford to live there, so they moved to where it's cheaper, and they moved downtown. And so now their hotels are being shut down, and so they're coming over to Victoria, they're going to Kamloops. I just heard when I was doing the Walk for Justice that Clearwater has set up emergency shelters along the Coquihalla Highway. Because they said that they found homeless people sleeping under the bridges there. Now, when it gets cold there on the Coquihalla, it's like, you know, minus, you know, 30, minus 40 up on the mountaintops, right? But the Coquihalla, there's no payphones, there's no food banks, there's no emergency shelters, there's no buildings along that place. So we got homeless people sleeping out on our highways. And it's getting worse, they said, because a lot of people are going to Vancouver expecting to find jobs, expecting to find, you know, a place to live. And that's not happening. They're finding some jobs. There's people there that I know that are sleeping in their cars at the Olympics. They're building condos for the Olympics, and yet they're homeless themselves. We've got people that, you know, are getting paid, you know, $25, $30 an hour. There's nothing to rent. They've got good credit. So then they move down to Vancouver and they kick out the homeless there. So in 2010, the provincial government said that they were going to have all of downtown Eastside Vancouver taken care of. So where are they going to put them? They're sending them to where? You know, the churches, they're sending them to Vancouver Island here. They're sending them, you know, to Kamloops, to Calgary, anywhere. They're being offered anywhere they want to go. Well, most of the people that have grown up on the West Coast, or the East Coast, I should say, they know what the weather's like there. They know what the social service program's like there. So they don't want to go back to the East Coast after being out here, because out here there's very little snow. It very seldom gets to, you know, like minus 20 here. But it's the rain. People out here, they're dying of TB, they're dying of exposure because their body temperature never gets warm. It's always cold, right? And so, you know, people like it here in Victoria. They always say it's sunny and everything, but after a while your body gets used to it, right? And so the homeless people here, they just like are saying, well, you know, where can I go? And so, you know, I always tell people they can go to the parks, they can join a fight to reclaim some buildings. And so for me personally, I'm about educating people about their rights, whether they're homeless or not. Homeless people are here to stay. Homeless people have rights. Homeless people deserve to be treated with dignity and respect. And so, you know, it's a, to get that message across to everybody, they're not really hearing it. Homeless people, they're starting to lose faith in themselves because of the way the government is treating them. And it's like, it's really hard. It's really hard for activists to keep that fight up, to keep, you know, reinstilling that belief in everybody that there is hope at the end of the tunnel if we just mobilize, right? But it's how do we mobilize? That's where the challenge is. So that's it.
I'm wondering, can we, do you think we can mobilize still with Canadian authorities as we've tried and tried to talk with them, to collaborate, to find a compromise, to find like equality relations, but
I think
that's
we could.
Not what is happening.
I think we could find, you know, some, you know, governments that are sympathetic to the homeless or the social issues. But, you know, it's a, we have to remember to support them when they do vote and when they do pass a bill in our favor. Because, you know, elections only come once every 3 years and people go in and they cast their ballot and then they, like, forget about the politicians. Well, you know what, at the local levels in all of our cities, our little towns and everything, if we were to get involved with them and find out, you know, which one of our city representatives will hear our issues and come out to different events, then, you know, it's like, there's where we start to make change. We start to network with them. But I don't put 100% faith in them either, because they're caught in that hard place where they have to follow the rules of the city, and they also have to follow the rules of their heart. And then it's like, if their heart is saying, I want to make social change for everybody, then, you know, they're really good that way. But then, because they have to follow the rules of a old colonizing system, then, you know, it's like, okay, we need to teach them, the city officials, that they can change those rules.
Do you think we can change the structure?
Slowly. But you know what, it's like, we can change the structure if we're willing to commit to the time. And if we're willing to be patient with each other and hear with our hearts, not with the dollar signs. Politicians like to listen to the dollar signs. And people who are really socially active, they like to hear with their hearts first. You know, like we like to hear that, you know, somebody's doing really good because they fed that person that day, or they gave them warm socks, or they gave them a coat. And you know, there's no way you can measure that time. So it's like, that's how we're making change, is then we start talking to the city officials to say, okay, well, you know, like, if you can pass a bill that says it's okay to give food away, that's a good step. If you can pass a bill that says that we're allowed to serve food in your office, that's a good step. But, you know, it's like, there's lots of different bylaws that forbid people from taking action because people are afraid. Anarchists and activists, they're not afraid because we see things differently, and we want to see change, but we have to learn to be patient with each other and look at change as today. Today is today. Today we change something. But we have to look at that, you know, in 5 years' time, too. We're looking at the same issue. So, you know, it's learning how to be patient, right? Finding out who's in our representative areas, that's a good way to start, to find out who is going to be representing us, to say, oh, okay, you know, like, I'm going to go talk to so-and-so, or I'm going to go and talk to that person and tell them to come out and come for a walk with me. Tell them to come and look at the world the way I look at it. So there is a little hope.
Had you seen good politician in your life?
The only one that I could say I've seen. And, you know, the first name that always comes to my mind is Elijah Harper. He's a true warrior. Elijah was the one person who put an end to the Meech Lake Accord. He's from back east, he's native, and he still stood up against all his peers in Ottawa at Parliament Hill and said no. And everybody was needing his vote so that they could pass the Meech Lake Accord, and he still wouldn't be bought out. So, you know, to me, that's a good politician, a good warrior, somebody that can understand what the issues are, that voted with his heart, not with his paycheck. And, you know, that when it comes to the federal government, you know what, I don't see any really good people coming out that will understand the issues of homelessness. I understand that there's some people that will say that they represent homeless. I know that there's people saying that we're about social change, but, you know, to me, social change is where everybody benefits from change. Other people, they're like social change as long as it, you know, benefits them. And, you know, it's like, do we vote for this person that says that they have, you know, the soft heart, that they have this, you know, desire to make change? I think we need to start paying attention to our politicians before each election to see what they're made of, so that we know that they're true to their heart. So, I don't know, with this next federal election... Yeah.
Okay. What do you think we can do? Because we talk about working on the politician and surveillance of politician, but what we can do with this politician?
You can make them accountable. You can make them accountable to everybody. And there's one thing that I noticed that most people didn't keep track of, you know, that at the in the parliament, you can find out what politicians or what MPs, what bills they voted for and what ones they didn't vote for, and you can keep a running record of what they're doing. You can find out what meetings they went to, what community, like what public functions they went to. But, you know, that takes time again. So it's like, what can we do with politicians? You know, it's like, keep writing them, keep phoning them. Every time they're on the radio, listen to them. And, you know, if you're having a public event, like a rally, invite them. You know, you can go into their office and say, you know, we're doing this, you know. Tell them what time, and they'll tell you that they can't come. But you know what? You tell them, you say, okay, well, I'm giving you 3 weeks' notice, I'm giving you 4 weeks. You just keep bugging them until they eventually come out. But you know, it's like they're really busy doing I don't know what, but they're doing something, right? And that's always their excuse. They're saying, oh, we're really busy, and I'm like, okay, well, you know, like, I'm going to come back here next week, or I'm going to come back in 2 days. I'm going to leave this poster here. I'm going to pamphlet this. I'm going to leave my phone number here. You know, like, just keep bugging them. They're like little children in that, you know. You have to keep reminding them.
Hey, can you talk about some reference if you people want to read more about the homeless situation? And know more about how to struggle against politicians or to reappropriate their lives?
I always tell people that, you know, if they're really interested in homelessness, come down and talk to the homeless people. You know, homeless people like to be heard. They like to have, you know, a chance to talk with people, to share their stories. you know, they're not all drug addicts, they're not all alcoholics, they're not all, you know, bad people. They're people that are victims of circumstances beyond what they can control. And so I say to people like university students, go down and talk to them. Or, you know, they're so afraid, university students and politicians, they're kind of like one of the same. They're fragile. So I just tell them, come on, hold my hand and I'll walk with you. And I do. I really take them out. You know, it doesn't matter whether I'm Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary. Because I said, this is the way you talk to them. You see that they're the same people. So, you know, just go out and talk with them, find out their stories. And if people are really afraid to go out and actually communicate with other people, it's like, okay, well, you know, then think about it, that homeless person is just as much afraid of you as you are of them. And if you think you're a bad person, then don't go and talk to them. And they're like, well, I'm not a bad person. And I'm like, well, homeless people aren't bad. They're pretty good people. And then, you know, if they don't want to go that way, or they, you know, they, if there's like an event happening, you know, like in Victoria, there's really big major events happen here that support homeless people. Like they have all the Christmas dinners, and then they have, you know, Run for the Homeless on January the 1st. They have levee tours. They have all sorts of things that are happening in that, where people can get free food and the homeless can go in and mingle with them. It's like, okay, so come out and serve some food. Food Not Bombs is always looking for people to cook for them, to donate food. They're looking for plates, things like this, right? There's church groups that are always trying to gather blankets and socks and warm clothing. You know, you can get involved that way. That's, you know, what I call that bubble of safety, because they're afraid the homeless are contagious. And it's like, you know, that's one way I get people to get over that fear. Then he's like, okay, you're helping them, you know, now why don't you help by taking these blankets or these coats, and we'll walk downtown and we'll give it to a homeless person.
Have you think about also to talk about with Gordon Campbell and Dumpster Dive with?
Gordon Campbell doesn't like me. Gordon Campbell, you know, talking with him about dumpster diving, it's like talking to him about being an alcoholic. He doesn't like that either. So, you know, he doesn't understand, you know, the issues of, you know, dumpster diving, or the fact that we have people that are so poor that they're forced to live in the dumpsters, they're forced to eat out of the dumpsters. He doesn't understand that we have people eating dog food or cat food, you know, so it's not high on his priority as a liberal person. He's not liberal-minded in that way of thinking, to say, oh, we have to do something about this. All they could do is change the bylaw that allows restaurants to put food outside the door. You know, like if there's leftover food, you know, that would solve a lot of dumpster diving problems right away. That would feed a lot of people all at the same time. But, you know, Canada's crazy that way. They're like, whoa, well, that's my food, you know, I paid for it. And it's like, well, get over it. You're throwing it out in the garbage anyhow.
Yeah.
But again, do you think that we can change the structure? Or...
yeah, we can change
it. Should we, like, abolish more of the market?
I think we can change it. I think we can change it if we, you know, started talking to people and saying, you know, like, if we can't talk to our politicians, let's talk to the restaurant owners and saying, you know, I can help you get rid of your food, you know, if you want to put it in a garbage bag or in a container, put it beside the dumpster, not in the dumpster. We'll take it away. We'll feed the people on the streets, and, you know, then that way it's, you know, something that restaurant people, they like to feel good. They like to feel good knowing that they're helping out their community. And so it's like, that's one way of selling it to them. But, you know, if we're wanting to change the bylaw, we need to have restaurant owners on our side. but we also need our local politicians too that can say, okay, we need to change this bylaw, you know, like we need to tell them that it's cost efficient, there will be less wasted food going to the garbage dump, that means less wild animals going to the dumps, to the dumps, I should say, because then they won't be attracted to go there for the food. And then, you know, people then would be getting fed if they were able to eat decent food in town. And, you know, so we'd be able to come at them with different strategies, different ideas, talking about, you know, how it saves the environment, it's saving the healthcare, it's saving, you know, the business owner a lot of money. But, you know, that's a hard sell because they always say, well, you know, what about safety? What about health-wise? And I'm like, for me, right away, I say, what about the person that's dying on your street?
It's like the owners of the hotels in Vancouver, of like,
yeah,
these hotels owners that say, you know, we want to do something for the community, we'll take more homeless in our place, we'll make place and all. But instead, what I heard is that they make profit out of the people that they take in their rooms because they put 3 or 4, and then the welfare pays directly the room.
Yeah.
So the owner makes 3 or 4 times the profit of the room than he should. So there's not the same interest, the lights and you know, the masses.
Exactly. So that's another thing that's a problem. That's a problem with people making money off of having homeless people. They make money off of the poor because they exploit them in a way that says, oh, well, you know, you're getting your rent direct, you're getting your hydro direct, so, you know, that. So what if I rent it to 4 or 5 people? You're not using it all the time. And so, you know, it's like, well, what are you doing then? What are you doing with this stuff, right? And it's like, I'm renting, you know, and, you know, you're charging people $2,000-$3,000 a month to rent one room, and that's a crime. So it's not the homeless person or the home or the poor person that is the bad person. Then it's the person that's taking the money from, you know, from them and saying, oh, you know, so what? You know, you're sharing your room with 5 other strangers. You know, at least we're getting our money. At least you have a roof over your head. That to me is a criminal offense. When you got the person that's taking the paycheck.
At least if they could pay only the room and then share like the rest of the money that they take from the welfare and they like invest it in a common project. Like I find often the people that are the more oppressed doesn't have the resources. So that's a way that we could work with some organism or work with the city as like taking the resource from them. Like we were talking about that with people in Grass Narrows that like would work with some like other organizations, environmental pacifist organization, but they would work with them just to take their resources because they were more credible to, you know, the government or to the community because they were white, they were middle class and all. So they take all the resources for like so much years, you know, from the native people and from the more oppressed, and so that's why they have more resources. But they didn't want to, they weren't their friends, see?
Yeah.
Because they didn't have the same interest. And even like they realized that the danger was that those persons recuperate the fight that they led, like, and they auto, you know, they auto did in their community, and they tended to recuperate that and say that it's what it was there. You know, they must be recognized for it, but it was the natives that lived there, you know, for all their lives that were standing on the road and doing this blocking for 5 years and living there and, like, doing the blocking.
You know, one thing I learned over the last few years around homelessness is that in the native populations, historically, there was no homeless. There was no orphaned children. Because, you know, with the orphan children, somebody else, you know, your auntie, your uncle, your grandparents, and that would take you in. So we never had, you know, the foster care system. the homeless situation on the reserve. You know, people would just share their houses, you know, like sometimes, you know, there was like maybe 3, 4, 5 families all living in one house. And they would just expand on that, you know, on that one house. And then along comes colonization. The Indian Act says that one family, one house. And that breaks up the family right away, you know. It's like, oh, okay, well, my family is like, right now we got like, you know, 3 married couples and, you know, like 10 kids. That's my family. And then colonization says, no, that's not your family. One married couple, 3 kids. And they say, oh, okay, so where are these other people going to go? And, oh, we'll give them a house. Well, now that's changed over the years. You know, there's no more, you know, housing being built for Aboriginal people anywhere in Canada. As far as I know, you know, there's a need for housing. But the Indian Act says, well, you know, we can't build any more housing. We can't expand any more land because we have to buy back the land. I'm like, well, why should we have to buy back our land? It was stolen from us in the first place, so why don't we just take it back, right? This is where, you know, I would totally support the people over in Tyndanega and, you know, Six Nations and that. I would, you know, like, if I was there, I would be out there on the lines with them. You know, sitting there with them saying, yeah, I hold up this sign because, you know, these houses belong to us. On the West Coast, they're so fragmented here with the First Nations. They're just like scattered everywhere and everybody's stuck in their own little pods. Nobody's talking with each other because they don't want to have somebody else to come in and steal your stuff. They don't want to share because they're so afraid of losing that little bit of, you know, money that they have, because it's all they got. Last year, I think it was last year, when we were having lots of rain in that year, and there was places flooding, one of the reserves went for 10 days with no hydro, because the federal government and the provincial government couldn't agree with who was going to pay for the hydro to be hooked up. And the municipal government was saying, well, when one of you guys decides who's going to pay for it, then we will deal with the situation right then and there. But, you know, it took them 10 days to come up with a decision on who's going to pay for that one person to walk over there and put 2 wires together to turn the hydro back on. And so, you know, this reserve has maybe about 150, 200 families on it. And it's like, that's a crime. That, to me, in my opinion, that's a crime because of the fact that, you know, there's so many people out there that were paying their hydro, so many people need to have electricity because of health care. You know, you can give all these reasons why they need it, but, you know, the biggest crime is that the 3 governments couldn't get their shit together to decide who's going to walk over. That's all it was hooking up 2 wires that broke apart because a tree fell on top of it. And so, you know, it's like Aboriginal people suffer in a silent way. So I always break Canada up into, you know, the categories that we have: the poor, we have the homeless, and we have Aboriginal people. All 3 of them suffer the same symptoms. For Aboriginal people, I always argue with people when they say we're First Nations, we're Aboriginal, we're Natives, we're Indians. They said they call us First Nations because we're so far behind, we think we're first. And they said, but we're so far behind because on the World Court, under the United Nations, under the Human Rights, Canada treats its Canadian natives, they said 167th on the list. Third world countries treat their indigenous people better. So our homeless population in Canada, about 60% of the homeless community are First Nations. We have a larger population of people in jails because of health care and because of inadequate housing. We have a lot of teenage suicides. Not even teenage suicides. I think we've got a lot of suicides in general in all age brackets, right? But one in every three Aboriginal people will succeed at committing suicide. And why? It's because, you know, they're not getting the right foods, they're not getting the roof over their head, they're not getting, proper, clothing to keep them warm. All this stuff in the history of Aboriginal people, we would be able to go out and hunt, get our food, get our blankets, be able to go and chop a tree down to put heat in our huts or our teepees. We'd be able to live off the land, but because of colonization, we're no longer able to do that. Because of colonization, we're losing our children. We're losing our children to the white care, to the foster care system. We're losing our lives because the foods that we eat are not good foods for us. The foods that we eat come from McDonald's, come from, the corner grocery store. It's food that we normally would be able to go out and hunt, but that resource isn't there anymore. So all that stuff, I figure, contributes to homelessness right there. Lack of housing, health care. I could go on and on about that one.
If you want.
Something else? Well, I just wanted to really encourage people, to support the homeless movement. Get out and, take what action you can. It doesn't have to be anything spectacular. It's just a simple little thing. If you've got a spare, set of socks, give it to a homeless person. If you got tobacco, give it to them. If you've got a spare room in your place, rent it. Rent it at a welfare rate, not like that triple the rate. I would say give them that room. That's because that's me personally. I would give them my room, and that's what usually gets me into trouble. So, I'd encourage people to give a homeless person a break. And give them a chance, because not all homeless people are bad. They're not all on welfare. They're not all junkies. So, go out, support agencies like Food Not Bombs. Go check out the emergency shelters. If you don't have these services, create one. Put free things in front of your yard, in front of your driveway. That's what we do. It's what we do in our community houses here, is that anything that, we don't use, we move it from, our living room or our porch. And in my case, it's the hallway. It gets shoved out the door, and it's usually stuff that's reusable. So, it's like, do something that way. If you want to find out more about homeless people, ask the homeless person. Get out and talk to them. Go to the Homeless Nation website. Like, Homeless Nation has been around for just a few years now, and people are just finding out about it, that it started out in Montreal. It started out as a university project by one of the guys there that was working in a shelter. And, he said, here he is, he's working, he's partly homeless himself, and he's filming homeless people. And because of that action that he was doing, his teacher submitted his video footage to the National Film Board. The National Film Board said, we're going to give you more money in that to create, you know, a website, to do whatever you want with it. And, you know, this individual saw it in his heart to have a kind heart. He cared enough about the people he was working with to offer them employment, to give them a tool to tell their stories, right? So, you know, that's a kind of, you know, initiative that, you know, we could all get on board. Instead of, you know, supporting Google or supporting some other place, we can go to Homeless Nation, join up with them, support them, make a donation to them, learn about the homeless people. If you're homeless yourself, share your story. Share your story with the world, because there are people out there that want to hear. They want to hear your story. They don't want to hear about the drugs. They don't want to hear you swearing. Those are the things that turn people off right away. But, you know, if you speak from the heart, you're going to get a lot of people paying attention. You know, support local initiatives like Our Voice or the Street News. Those are street news magazines that help poor people and homeless people get out and, you know, earn a little bit of extra income. Because, you know, if you buy from them, you know that the money is being spent locally. You know that you're helping that person. That person, that may be their only way to get their medication. That may be their only way to get food in their belly, because, you know, maybe they have pride. Most homeless people I know have pride, and, you know, if they had a chance to go out and have a little bit of pocket change, they'll go and buy their own cigarettes, they'll buy their own socks, they'll buy their own food. It's really empowering, you know, for them to say, I sold this paper, I got my own stuff. Not all homeless people want to have things given to them. They want to do for themselves, right? So, you know, those are simple little actions people can do to address the issues of homelessness. The other way to do some addressing the issues is, I'm going to tell people, get out and vote. Get out and vote on Tuesday, October the 14th. Get out and vote on that day. Just even if you don't know who you're going to vote for, or you don't have anybody you don't that you like there, vote for the person you least likely think will get in. You know, make your vote count, because there's homeless people, there's poor people, there's people that are first-time voters that are not going to be able to vote. So make a difference and just get involved.
What do you think about cancel the vote?
About down south?
Cancel. Like vote what? What is the...
Canceling
the vote.
Oh, canceling your vote?
Yeah.
Well, that works too. You can cancel your vote, but you know what? They don't count that then, right? It's just like, okay, it's a waste of paper, it's a waste of a vote. So, you know, I always tell people, right, you know, they can cancel their vote, or they can use that as a way to make a political statement. You know, one way or the other, it's still getting in and exercising your right. So I can't tell people not to cancel their vote. There's simple ways you can cancel it, but there's also ways that you can make your vote count. And if you don't believe in the political thing, then, you know, like, cancel your vote, but get out to the all candidate meetings and have your voice heard. Tell them why you're going to cancel your vote. And they have to hear you then.
Or organize without them.
Yep. Organizing,
against
getting
the
people.
Structure established.
Yes. Yep.
I interrupt the last thing you wanted to say.
What's that?
I interrupt the last thing you wanted to say.
That was the last thing I wanted to say.